Blog Talk Radio.
Last night I saw a lunar eclipse in the sky, and something happened in my mind's eye. I saw you in a whole different light. Clear.
Because I want you to stay right here for the next hour. Welcome to Read My Lips. This is Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio Red. So happy to be here and have a chance to speak with some very interesting authors, very interesting people. They have a great point of view about their area of specialty. And as I like to say, they know a heck of a lot about a lot of things that I don't know too much about. So I'm going to learn along with you. I would be remiss if I didn't start the show with a quick prayer for Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords in Tucson, Arizona, and the horror of what happened at that Safeway and the heroes who emerged and the sadness that's going to surround us all as a nation for a long, long time. And coincidentally, our first topic, which we'll get to in just a moment, is about violence. Not that kind of violence, but tangentially violence. We're going to talk about keeping your daughters safe, keeping women safe, women keeping ourselves safe. The things we don't think about can be the things that bring us into situations we just don't know what to do about. And I have a specialist whose website is called aworldwithoutrape.org. This is not going to be an OMG, a horror storytelling. It's going to be about safety, about prevention, about awareness. So we're going to talk from the heart with somebody who cares so deeply about women's safety. Then we're going to move to talking about, well, we could say job safety, to a woman who is a speaker and an author and understands the workplace better than anybody I know right now. We're going to talk about trending in employment. Yeah, you might get somebody like me who's age over the speed limit. I'm not shy to admit that. Working with somebody who's just barely out of college and then a manager who might be somewhere cutting the age difference in half in the middle. How do we deal with all these multi-generational cultures and learning curves and savvy or not in terms of technology all in the same workplace? A lot of challenges today. And we're going to finish up with figuring out how you can use Chinese medicine, the ancient lore of Chinese medicine, to get rid of headaches and wrinkles. I want to hear that one. Lose weight, stop smoking, take better care of your body using the meridians, using something called the Jinglo. I'm going to find out from our author at that point. We'll call in all the way from China. And by the way, it's 13 hours ahead there, so she's Tuesday morning already. But before we introduce my special guest, I'd like to do a shout-out to my Lorna. Congratulations about your new Macintosh and getting online in our first iChat. Dune, I love you. Sorry you're snowed in. Kaylee, we'll see you soon. My big kahuna, you were so patient with Grandma. Thank you. My ballerina and my artist and Joe, we'll see you at the airport in a little while. Hope you had a great trip. A couple of celebrity birthdays. Pat Benatar was born today in 1953. Well, it's public knowledge. I can say her age. You do the math. George Foreman, the boxer, was born today in 1949. Rod Stewart, 1945. And the biggie today, in case you forgot, how could you, Frank Sinatra Jr. was born in 1944. I'm sure that's on everybody's send a birthday card calendar. Johnny Ray was also born in 27. Ray Bolger, you all know the Scarecrow and the Wizard of Oz. And Ethan Allen, the Revolutionary War hero, not the guy who started the furniture stores. Please give me a break. Hello to Cousin Freddie in California, and hello to the Seattle Moose and the Seattle Chicks. I'm going to bring my first guest on now. His name is Richard Hart. His website is A World Without Rape. I wish we could change that to aworldwithoutviolence.org. Richard Hart, thank you for joining me today. And your book, which has great information, is called Keep Your Daughter Safe, 171 Ways Young Women Can Prevent Sexual Assault. Welcome to Read My Lips, Richard. How are you today?
Hi, Bonnie. I'm doing great. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So coincidental. I met you at the New York Publicity Summit, the National Publicity Summit in Manhattan a couple months ago. It seems like years ago. It was just last year, right?
Yeah.
Today's January 10th, so it was last year. And I think I said to you, I don't want to do a tell-all about the horrors of violent crimes, and I want to keep this on the informational side, which I know you agreed to do. But who would have thought I would have been opening the show with talking about the tragedy that happened with so much horrible violence on the loose in Tucson. You have any comments from your standpoint, Richard Hart?
Normally I would. The problem is the jury is still out on exactly what has transpired in terms of the perpetrator of the acts and what, you know, what may have been able to. My whole world is about prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And once the facts become known about how he was able to obtain the weapons and what his mental state was and all those types of things, it would be easier to potentially comment about how something like this could have been prevented, and which is my giant thing, is all about prevention as opposed
yeah.
to the horror stories. So I'm glad
that makes sense. Yeah, I know there's a lot of concern that he did get the gun and the clip and the ammo legally. It was all
right.
obtained legally. They know that. But as you say, there's a lot more to the story. I think we need to focus on the heroes and hoping that Gabby Giffords gets well and the other
yes.
victims recover. Very, very sad, and I do cry real tears. Somebody said to me, oh, Bonnie, you just turned it on the radio. I do not. I bleed just like everybody else, and when something gets me, I could spend the next hour crying on the radio, but that won't do any good for you. So, Richard Hart, let's talk about the myth behind women's self-defense classes. Let's talk about tall, dark, and handsome. You meet them at a bar, a dance, a mixer, a corporate event, and it's, oh, my God, you tell all your friends, oh, your family, I met this fabulous man. He's so gorgeous. He's got great manners. You should see the way he dresses. And that car, never would you believe in a million years he could be the monster waiting to cause you great harm. So
yes.
where do you want to start on this? Let's talk about women's self-defense classes. What's the myth behind that, Richard?
Yeah, and I'm glad we do start with that one, Bonnie, because that is probably the biggest myth that exists out there, is that if women take self-defense classes, carry pepper spray, things like this, that they'll be safe. The first thing is, with self-defense, I have a saying that is, if a woman has to rely on self-defense, it's already too late. The problem and the thing that nobody talks about is the fact that the average man outweighs the average woman by approximately 50 pounds.
Yep, I would say so. Even in a nation plagued by obesity, everybody's getting proportionally bigger. So
correct.
I think you're right. Okay.
And so what happens is a lot of people that know anything about fighting, you know, boxing and things like that, they have fighters that are usually within 5 pounds of one another fighting one another. Because if one fighter is giving away 50 pounds, he could be the greatest fighter in the world. He's still going to lose the fight. And
mm-hmm.
and that's the problem that women are facing, is that generally speaking, unless they can catch their attacker completely off guard, the fact that all he has to do is cover them, and there's nobody that's going to be able to lift 250 pounds off their body. And so the problem is that men are able to physically dominate women, and there's virtually nothing a woman can do about it. I mean, that would include a black belt in karate. It's very difficult once a man
Richard,
is using his
weight. Richard, would you therefore say, let's make a pronouncement here, Richard Hart. Would you tell women listening and people who are going to tell their friends or their relatives that they heard us on the radio, would you say it's not a good thing to take a self-defense course at all, or we become overly convinced that we can defend ourselves and that's a false comfort level? What would you say?
Great question, and it really is. I recommend self-defense for everybody just because certain situations arise where it can be valuable. But
mm-hmm.
in taking self-defense, no matter how proficient somebody gets, they never want to be looking at a situation saying, oh, I can handle this. You don't want, even if you're carrying a gun as a police officer, you don't walk down a dark alley at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Because things happen, and you don't want to unnecessarily put yourself in danger.
So don't go around saying, hey, I took karate, I took jujitsu, I took martial arts, I have a whatever color belt.
I can handle
anything.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So that's false. So let's move on to tall, dark, and handsome, and then we're going to move to my favorite area to talk about, which everybody still talks about a lot because millions of people do it, and you know, it's online dating.
Right.
Let's talk about the safety. We don't have to go into, the normal, don't give out your address and phone number and your profiles and all
right.
that, but let's talk about the first meeting and the first real
yeah.
meeting. So, tall, dark, and handsome. We meet him, we see him, we're impressed. He meets all the criteria, demographically, the right zip code, you know what I mean.
Right.
How would you possibly know that it's going to go very wrong soon?
First of all, there's warning signs, but there is also you don't know. And there are two types of attackers. One is known as a serial assailant. The other is known as a situational.
Why don't you explain those differences? I saw
yes,
those in
right.
your book. Go ahead.
A serial assailant is the guy you read about in the newspaper. He's the guy that's broken into women's homes. He's the guy there's a public rape history, meaning the police will announce that there's a rapist on the loose. That's a serial assailant, somebody that leaves the house with the full intent of locating a victim and doing whatever he chooses to do.
Well, he's going
to
do it over and over again because some chemical synapse or something is just not right, and it's going to happen.
Right.
Okay, good.
A situational assailant, and this is a term that I've developed. I have not heard any other people use it. But a situational assailant is somebody that, based on things that are happening around him, he will all of a sudden be triggered into an attack. So it could be something as simple and stupid as being on a date and having a suggestive conversation, and all of a sudden he starts getting wound up. It might be that he saw a movie. It might be that he's had too much to drink. It could
be the woman is dressed too provocatively and triggers something in him. Like, asking for it.
Right. But once again, there is no law that says women have to dress a specific way. And so I always try to stay away from that one. But yes, that it could be a trigger such as that. So the situational assailant is very difficult to spot because things change. And all of a sudden, the person changes. Now, there are a few warning signs of what you call the aggressive male personality. But the one thing that I want to start with is just that you really don't know somebody until 3 or 4 or 5 dates in. And you should not, just because they do meet the tall, dark, and handsome list, you should not think, oh, okay, tall, dark, and handsome equates to trustworthy, because it does not. There was one.
Go ahead.
There was one attacker.
Mm-hmm.
One attacker that was part of the Max Factor fortune, huge case out here in California a couple years ago, because he actually jumped bail. This guy was extremely good looking. He was picking up women in bars and taking them home, drugging them, raping them, videotaping the whole event.
And
here was this guy that, if you look at his picture, you're sitting there thinking, this guy doesn't need to do any of that. He's a great looking guy.
And he's got money.
I mean, it was the perfect example of tall, dark, and handsome does not equate to trustworthy. So let's take it to the second step that you were talking about, though, which is, what are some of the warning signs? When a woman is on a date with a man, in the first few dates, these things will show up in subtle forms, and it's the reason that I tell a lot of women to try to avoid alcohol in the early dates.
Mm-hmm.
Because what will happen is the man may speak poorly about women. He may speak poorly about his ex-wife. He may treat waiters with disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
A woman, he may touch on a subject, and the woman that's on the date says, you know, I'm just not comfortable with that. And 3 minutes later, he brings it up again.
Yep.
These are kind of warning signs of a guy that does what he feels like doing, but also an aggressive personality.
Let me ask you a question, Richard. I have a friend who told me that, she's dated a lot of men online and finds them mostly immature, quote-unquote immature in their attitudes about women. And we're talking mostly late 40s up to mid-50s, okay?
Yep.
Not talking babies here. And some of the men think it's really cute to pull out, shall we say, politely? Let's say very graphic cartoons they might have collected, or anything that's a little bit focused on physicality and something they think is a joke. It could be an ad for a certain body part enlargement, or it could be just a cartoon in one case. And the woman said, I'm really not comfortable looking at that with you. And he said, oh, come on, and kept taking it out and looking at it. And it was just a picture, but there was an intention there. Is that a man who's just stupid and immature, or is that somebody who could be violent?
Well, there's a couple things going on. Number one, it's inherently disrespectful. You're out with somebody on a first date, and you're engaging in those types of behaviors. So it's disrespectful to women, and that's a warning sign in and of itself. The second thing is that generally men that do that, it's what's known in the sales arena as a test close. So you show this suggestive picture to a woman,
right?
And there are certain women that will respond, and they'll laugh, and they'll say, oh, that's so funny, or now all of a sudden he realizes, oh, okay, this is somebody that potentially I can be having sex with on the first date. And sex with on the first date, there's nothing that says you can't have sex on the first date if both parties are willing. It's no big deal. I don't normally suggest it, but it's no big deal if both parties are part of it. The problem is that men that will do this, they're doing their test, but the second the woman says, I'm not comfortable, and he says, oh, come on,
mm-hmm.
I guarantee you that is the start of one of these situational problems. That's the guy that he starts drinking, and all of a sudden, her no, he isn't listening, and he doesn't care. And so those are heavy warning signs. Normally, I wouldn't even do something like that on a first date, but if somebody was doing it on the first date and he took this picture out and the woman says, I'm not comfortable with that, and he put it away and there was no more discussion, then
mm-hmm.
clearly this is a man that respects the woman that he's with.
Now, I want to clarify the title of your book, Keep Your Daughter Safe, 171 Ways Young Women Can Prevent Sexual Assault. Yeah. I'm going to make the stretch that it's really for any woman, because online dating applies to anybody who could use a computer and can, you know, click an email address and write down a phone number and follow through. So would you don't really have to just focus this on young women. It does apply to everybody?
Yes, it does. And I actually have three different titles. One is Keep Your Daughter Safe, one is Keep Your College Daughter Safe, and the other is just called Preventing Sexual Assault. All three of them are basically the exact same book. It's just that the titles appeal to different age levels.
I like that.
They have the same information. And so, yes, and I've had men read the book and say, you know, this isn't just a great book for women. This is a great crime prevention book, because a lot of these strategies, they also prevent crime. I mean, if you're paying attention while you're walking through a parking lot, you're less likely to get your purse snatched and things like that. You know,
and awareness is a big part of prevention, too. I know you emphasize that.
Absolutely.
I want you to draw a line in the sand here, please, and give women a recommendation on how many dates to wait before you even broach the subject of going to his place or your place. You said you don't recommend sex on the first date, the second, the third, the fourth. At what point is a man going to lose interest? Maybe it's okay if he loses interest and say, bah, never going to get her in the sheets. I'm not interested anymore. I'm canceling our date. What would be a reasonable amount of time, as far as you're concerned, Richard, your experience, for a woman to really get to know a man before she takes her pantyhose off?
Yeah, see, now, it really is two separate questions, Bonnie, because, again, I don't have a position regarding, I mean, technically, I just don't think people should really be sleeping together on the first date. But that being said, I don't really have a strong position that people can't sleep together on the first date.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is about the woman that does not want to be sexually aggressed in that situation, a woman that says, you know, I want to get to know this guy before I have sex with him. That's the woman that needs to wait three or four dates just to see just to learn who he is and learn if she can trust him.
Right.
There's a difference. And a woman that says, I don't mind having sex on the first date, hey, if she wants to do that and she feels comfortable with it, there's no big deal, because the man's not going to attack her because he's already getting what he wants.
Okay. That's true. He may still be violent in the bedroom, but he's not going to be the initiator.
Yeah,
of
and it's
violent
and
attack.
Violence in the bedroom is unusual. I mean, violence in the bedroom, rape and violence kind of go hand in hand. But
mm-hmm.
but a man that's getting sex from a woman is generally, you know, unless he's really kind of just gone and that puts him into the serial assailant type of profile.
Right.
Generally, men aren't going to be overly violent in a bedroom just because they're already getting what they're looking for.
Interesting. We just have a couple minutes before we bring Colleen on. Why don't you give us a couple of tips? I'm just going to let you talk for 3 minutes, Richard.
Sure.
A couple tips on when you do make that first visit to a man's apartment or his office alone with him with the intention of getting a little closer. Where do you leave your purse? What do you take with you if you have to go to the restroom? What do you look for in terms of exits? Give us a couple of strategies, please, for safety.
Great. Yeah, thanks. And that's all really important, because when you are in their environment, it's their environment. They're in control of virtually everything. The first thing you want to do is if you're not going to a house, so you're in an apartment, you're in a condominium complex, something like that, the first thing, just walking down the hall, you want to be paying attention to fire alarms. That's the quickest way to summon help if something goes wrong.
Interesting.
And so, yeah.
So it's not a question of if there's a fire, it's for help, for okay, great.
Correct. People are going to flood the halls immediately if you have to run out of a house and pull a fire alarm.
Never would have thought of that.
Yeah, instant safety. The second thing is that when you walk into the house, you want to pay attention to how is he closing his door. Is he locking the door? Is he chaining it, you know, putting the chain on it? Now, again, there's nothing wrong with him putting a chain on the door. There's plenty of people put chains on the door when they close their door. But if he has put the chain on, you just got to kind of remember, hold it, if I got to get out of here quickly, I got to pull the chain and I've got to unlock the door.
So would you start a conversation and say, I'd feel more comfortable if you don't chain the door and just get it over with right away?
Yeah, I don't. There's nothing wrong with having a chain door. See what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's just that's more of a comfort thing. It's not a warning sign. It's just something that you just need to be aware of.
Okay.
Same thing with where are the doors in the house? You know, where is the bathroom? Because bathroom doors generally have locks on them. Bedroom doors do not always have locks.
Correct.
So if all of a sudden you have to retreat to someplace inside of the house, you're usually trying to look at a bathroom. That's generally where you're trying to head in. So again, you want to just kind of look at where is the telephone? What are things that could potentially be used as weapons if all of a sudden he gets aggressive?
This is not very romantic, Richard Hart.
What's that?
This is not very romantic.
Well, no, but again, you ask,
know,
what are you looking for when you walk in? Yeah, it's not romantic. You just want to take a lay of the land. It's not about can you just trust them or not.
That's the point. That's
right.
Your point is when you're aware of your surroundings and aware of the people in your immediate surroundings, you've got to stop that oxytocin, stop that alcohol.
Right.
You've got to stop being mushy-gushy. Oh, he's so wonderful. I can't
wait.
Well,
the toughest part, Bonnie, I'll tell you, the toughest part is that women, and it's part of the paternal and maternal instincts, they give men the benefit of the doubt. Number one, they shouldn't do that. They just shouldn't. Men are by nature more aggressive people. I mean, that's just who we are. But number two, more importantly, is they give them the benefit of the doubt up front, but they also give them the benefit of the doubt when things start going wrong. And if there's one tip that I can really leave everybody with is when things start going wrong, they never get better. And that really is the true key, is that if something doesn't feel right, get out. If something,
say that again. I want you to say it again. When things start going wrong.
If something doesn't feel right, if something starts going wrong, it never improves. A man does not become less drunk. He doesn't become less aggressive. It always gets worse. And so women need to, when they see these things, they need to say, hold it. I don't want to wait and see if this guy somehow becomes okay. Any sign of something going wrong is a woman needing to get out of the unit or get out of the house as quickly as she can.
Follow your brain, your smarts, and follow your gut instinct.
Absolutely.
That's important.
Yes, absolutely.
Where can people find your book? Where can they find you? And I want you to stay on just a couple more minutes and welcome Colleen with me. But where can people find you, Richard Hart?
They can find the books on Amazon. They can find the books at the website. There's a worldwithoutrape.org, but I also own the domain endingrape.org, so it's a little easier to remember.
Okay, and you're also on Facebook at Keep Your Daughter Safe,
Facebook,
and Twitter.com at endingrape as well.
Right.
Okay, I thank you very much. Good information. I know we didn't have a lot of time, but I wanted to get right to the guts of it.
Thank you very much. For
online dating is really, and one quick question, how did you get started in this field? I know you have an Associate of Science in Criminal Justice. You earned at age 18, impressive, and you graduated from UC Berkeley at age 20. So a lot of brain power going on there. How did you pick this for your work?
You know, it really was prompted by just reading one too many stories of a woman being raped and killed. It was just every time I read one of these things, every time I see it on TV, it pulls out a little piece of my heart. And I thought, you know, because of my training, because of my knowledge, I could make a difference if I was writing something or speaking about this. And all of a sudden I realized if I don't do something, I have now become part of the problem instead of being part of the solution.
Well, I say bravo to you. Good way to start the new year, inspiring people. I'm going to click on my next phone line, and we're going to see if it opens up. Let's give it a shot here. Oh, you're welcome. Don't go away yet.
Say hello to
Colleen Kettenhoffen, the author of Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You, How to Advance Your Career and Have More Fun at Work. Hello, Colleen. Happy New Year.
Hi, Colleen.
Happy New Year. Hi, Bonnie. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
You two met, right? You met in New York?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And I love your title. I love your topic.
Isn't that great?
A lot of
friendships are made there at the summit. A lot of people. I'm always happy. You know something, when people line up, well, you both know I get, I don't know, 60, 70 people on my line typically. They have a lot of time to talk to each other.
Right.
I think a lot of acquaintances and friendships are made on my line. So I'm glad you all. Colleen, do you have any questions for Richard before? I know he has an appointment. So before he leaves us, Colleen, any questions about his book, Keep Your Daughter Safe?
You know, I think the main thing that I would say is this is really hitting home, hearing it from a man, because you hear women say, oh,
Bravo.
You know, you need to be careful, or I feel like the guys I've dated online are only interested in sex. I mean, that's typically what I hear, but
mm-hmm.
hearing these things about being careful from a man, I think strikes a different chord.
I think
you're
right.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of similar feedback on that, so thank you.
Mm-hmm, it's a real validation. Do you absolutely have to leave us, Richard?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. I've got somebody going to be knocking at my door in about 60 seconds.
Okay, we'll give you that 60 seconds to go get ready and be safe. Look out the people before you
Fantastic.
Open the door, Richard Hart.
Yes, thanks so much, everybody. Take care,
okay,
all right?
Thanks a lot,
Happy
Richard.
New Year.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Colleen, you've been talking, lecturing, you've been helping people figure out job strategies for many, many years. You're a beautiful lady who's also very smart about this, and I want to talk to you about the thing I mentioned in my intro about the conglomeration, the blending, I'll use the word commingling, of generations in the workplace today. Why don't you start us off with that, Colleen, and then we can talk a little bit about your background and how you got to be so smart about workplace issues. So, generation
sure.
mixing up. Well, how many generations are typically in a corporate workplace? Do you have any idea what the age ranges are today in a typical large corporation?
Well, typically there are three, but in some cases I would probably go out on a limb and say four, because you still have the radio agers, who would be the parents of the boomers. So the radio agers, or the silent generation as they're called, those are typically people born before 1946. Then you have the boomers. Typically the baby boomers, 1947 to 1961,
mm-hmm.
some studies might say 1964 or 65.
Right.
Then there's the Generation Xers, typically born between 1961 to 1981, or maybe to 1985, depending on what study you read. And then the Generation Ys, like the letter Y, also known as the Millennials, typically born 1981 or later. And I think it's important, because not only do I hear so much about this, the different generations and having them all work together and how do you get them motivated and what are the different perceptions of each in my speaking engagements, but even hotels and dog parks, you get into this conversation. And I think where this information's really important is with boomers staying in the workforce well into their 60s and 70s,
yeah.
and Generation Yers, especially people say, oh, I don't know, maybe 18 to 25, 18 to 28, with those people entering the workforce, everyone from the CEO down must get familiar with what I call the generational cultures, and how they influence working together.
Yeah, and that's where we're not just talking about the techno style lifestyles, the techno cultures, meaning who grew up or who cut their teeth on learning cell phones and Wi-Fi and all of that, and actually owns one or more cell phones and actually knows how to text and actually can figure out how to hook up a computer and use social networking, which is getting up there in the years. You know, I teach social networking and eBay and even online dating at my local adult ed center, and you'd be surprised, maybe you wouldn't, Colleen, at the people in their 60s and 70s who come to me and say, everybody's on Facebook, you got to teach me how so I can be Facebook literate. But we have also cultural styles about, I would believe it would affect how we dress at work, how we talk at work, how we expect politeness or lack thereof, what we share in terms of our personal secrets, and how we, whether we invite people to do things with us outside of work. I'm guessing that there would be, or I'm thinking there's a lot of cultural differentiators from segment to segment, as you just described, Colleen.
There are. And the one thing that I would say is that, you know, if you want me to share some of the different perceptions that I hear of the different generations, especially day in and day out, having spoken in 48 states as far as leading seminars and speaking at conferences and conventions, I start to hear the same things over and over. But I think probably my first disclaimer would be that this is really just perceptions of each
mm-hmm.
generation based on what I've heard from managers and supervisors, around the country, sometimes maybe CEOs or administrative assistants. So I'm pretty much just the messenger, but I probably would start with the radio agers.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, you know, those born roughly before 1946. And
the pre-boomers.
You know, you talked about,
pre-boomers. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the pre-boomers. And the one thing is that for them, they often respect authority just because they're authority figures. I mean, that's certainly a fact and certainly something that is a perception. They show up on time for work, if not early, or pretty much for everything. Very strong work ethic, and they work extremely hard. And I think you see some of these perceptions are pretty realistic with most of them. Now, here are some of the other perceptions. They're afraid of technology and reluctant to embrace change. They need to be told exactly what to do. They're very good at taking direction and orders.
And
they
expect
like
to receive
told.
Direction, right? They expect to be
yes.
told what to do. They're not self-starters.
They like structure. They like
mm-hmm.
planning. If
right.
these people are in charge, they like applying the structure of plans. And like you said, if they're working for someone else, they like to follow plans for two reasons. They respect authority, and again, they like structure.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And let's move into the boomer range. What's different about I'm a boomer? So what's different about us?
Me too. I can relate to that. Well, it's interesting because with the other generations, their parents and then also their children, they were perceived boomers that in their early working years, they put career and money ahead of family. They were really the first generation to take exotic honeymoons and vacations. I know my parents went to Lake Tahoe and some of my friends, their parents went to San Francisco, and this was having lived in Los Angeles, and a friend of mine, his parents grew up in New York City. They went to Niagara Falls, and, you know, that was kind of the big honeymoon as opposed to going to Bora Bora or someplace exotic. And having said that, they grew up, once they were able to be on their own, kind of living by the motto, live high on the hog early. They were considered to be the first generation to really focus on themselves, hence the tag, me generation.
Me generation, right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then certainly being perceived as waiting well until middle age or well into their 30s a lot of times before having their first child. And I remember hearing about a cartoon that featured a baby boomer celebrating her 40th birthday. And I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, as she was blowing out her candles, she exclaimed, "Oh my gosh, I forgot to have children."
Yeah, I've seen that. I know. Yes, sad but true. Sad but true. I actually have somebody from the summit coming on to talk about that in a couple of weeks. So that's a very interesting topic. So are baby boomers known as self-starters? Do they want more structure? I know that they have embraced technology and they're pretty damn smart about technology because they were just at that cusp when it was being introduced into the workplace, speaking from personal experience. But are they perceived by management as self-starters or structural?
I would say more self-starter because baby boomers, they were really the first ones to introduce casual days, the work-life balance issues.
That's right, casual
cases,
Fridays. I remember that. OMG, yes, I do. Okay,
yep.
Very interesting. Now let's move ahead to Gen X. Who are they? How old are
okay.
they?
Okay. Gen X, typically these are the people born roughly 1961 to 1981, or maybe some studies 1961 to 1985.
Okay, so both of my kids are Gen Xers then. Okay, I never thought of them that way. Go ahead.
Okay, and now they're perceived by older generations, especially at work, as impatient, that if they don't get what they want from the organization they're working for, they'll start looking for that next job opportunity. And I know according to the Department of Labor, they've had numerous jobs by the time they're 32 years old. I think I read something like 9 jobs by the time they're 32 2 years old
Get
from
out.
The time that they graduated from school.
Wow, I didn't think it was quite that severe, but I can attest to job changing every 2 to 3 years. And, you know, that used to be a real no-no, Colleen. We know in the old
yes.
days you were looked to be a company man or a company woman. You were looking for your pension. People were scared to death to change jobs because, oh, look at all the years I put in. I hate my boss. I hate my company. I hate my job. But how could I walk away now? It's been 20, 30 years. I'm stuck, right? Till the day I die
That's
or the
exactly
day I retire.
It.
There was that loyalty.
Yes. Well, and they grew up during the Great Depression where unemployment was 25%. Hard to believe it wasn't higher, but 25% unemployment. So with jobs being hard to come by, you know, I think their motto could have been, you know, you're lucky to have any job.
And,
you
and we're
certainly don't
today,
have to
too.
Love it.
I hear
yes,
that all the
now
time.
It's kind
People
of
say,
gone,
how are you?
Well,
I'm working. Oh, thank God you have a job. We say it more and
mm-hmm.
more. And let's talk about the entitled, the beyond the me generation, the Gen Y. It's like, okay, do for me, buy me, lift me, carry me, give me a job, pay me when I'm fired, pay me when I'm sick, give me the window office. I deserve it all. Did I say it all?
Oh, my gosh. You did. You almost paraphrased exactly some of the things that I was going to say, and like I said, you know, I've had good luck with this generation because one of my favorite places to go is I love to go to Starbucks. Sometimes I like to just get out of my office, go to Starbucks, and do my writing there. And it is a lot of Generation Ys, and, you know, the ones that I meet, they're polite, they're nice. Having said that, though, there are definitely biases in the workplace. And really the boss's bias, as we've said, you know, go both ways. The oldest generation, they're considered to be set in their ways and afraid of computers, and then the younger generation. One thing that I hear a lot in a lot of my speaking engagements and in conferences is people will say, Colleen, you have to remember, for the Generation Ys, growing up and playing sports meant everyone got a trophy. In some cases, scores weren't even kept. There were no losers.
That's right. And teachers were never supposed to use a red pen in school because it
yes.
could traumatize the child and give them post-traumatic stress distress syndrome for the rest
yes.
of their life.
Yes.
And they'd never be able to look at a red pencil again, and they'd be in therapy at the age of 4, right?
Yes, and I know there are some schools, I mean, maybe more than some, where the teachers are not allowed to use red pens. Who knows? Maybe that's
yeah.
everywhere. Because they say it's too damaging to the child's self-esteem.
I know. Do for me, buy for me. We're going to talk about headaches. My next guest, Wendy Wang, who's, I see she's calling in from China where she's 13 hours ahead. It's already 8:30 on Tuesday morning. But we'll talk about natural ways to get rid of the headaches if you have in your management team, if you're managing a Gen Y, because that would certainly give people headaches. But let's talk just for a couple more minutes, Colleen. And so what is the task? How do you even begin to train a manager to cope with the different generations on their teams? Because you could end up with a Y, an X, a boomer, and a, you know, if the higher up you go, you're going to have all of them in the mix, right?
Yes.
How do you
yes.
train a manager to deal with that? They need to have a psychology degree to deal with that, right? A degree.
You know, I think the first thing would be awareness, just to be aware of where each generation's coming from. You know, as you and I were saying, it's no wonder that radio agers have such a strong work ethic, because with jobs having been hard to come by, you know, they feel just lucky to be in a job. And I think a key thing in terms of awareness is first to remember with the Generation Y, and in some cases X, but especially with the Ys, the millennials, technology is their world. They grew up with it more than any previous generation. So they're used to instant gratification, text messaging, cell phones, blogs. I have heard that you can order something from India and in some cases have it mailed to you the very next day. So in some ways, if you look at it, it's not so much their fault. They just grew up in an age of instant gratification. Now, I have had a lot of boomer parents also who are friends of mine who have said, well, you know, we're the ones that created these monsters.
That's
because
right.
The the boomer parents really put the emphasis on education, which is good, but in many cases they didn't put the emphasis on working, and so Generation Ys are among the most educated generations, but many of them really did not work or didn't work much until their first job. And what I'm hearing is that a lot of them are living at home and they're not having to pay any bills. So just being aware that if everything's provided, there's not as much of an incentive.
Right.
I'd like to tell you, Bonnie, that the thing to do is if these people are not being productive, because one of the biggest pet peeves with bosses is a negative person with no solutions. But I have had a lot of human resources people and a lot of managers who have said, Colleen, even when we tell these young people, typically 18 to 24, that they could lose their jobs, they're not being productive, it's now not just a verbal warning, it's a written warning, and there's a lot of attendance issues, that in many cases these people are folding their arms and they're saying, well, if you fire me, you're going to give me unemployment, aren't you? I mean, you would never be so insensitive as an organization not to give me unemployment. And these HR people are saying, well, no, we would fight it because we're doing everything we can to train you and give you all the tools and resources and keep you here. And, you know, this may be shifting, though, now with it being harder to get a job.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a paradigm shift if things don't turn around fast, because we're seeing very, very big pools of talent just sitting on their butts trying to network themselves into – network until they're in tears. They don't even know which way to turn anymore. They're tired of the coffee dates, and they're tired of the meet and greets, and they're tired of the networking dinners and the networking brunches and the networking meetings and paying $3,000 to $5,000 a year to belong to a networking group for the privilege of not getting a job. And I think we're going to see a change in we're going to see, I think, the higher levels of – higher age levels are going to become – by requirement, they're going to become much more techno-savvy if that's the key to getting back into the workplace. And they're going to have to convince the HR managers and the interviewers that they can hack it. I think that's the way. We're going to just do it because we have to. What do you think?
Yes, I totally agree with you. And that's what I'm seeing is more with the older generations, that they are learning these skills simply because they have to.
Yep.
And I think the younger generation, especially the Ys, I think that in the future, if not now, I think they will become more malleable, more trainable, more coachable, because it's the only way they're going to be able to keep a job. And I wanted to say one more thing. I have had a lot of younger people in my seminars, because of course now they're starting to come in because some of them are in management positions and leadership positions, and some of them have raised their hands and they've said, you know, Colleen, we would actually prefer to be like our grandparents more than our boomer parents.
Interesting. And on that
and
note,
I said,
we're going to
really?
Turn to my next guest because she wants to talk about time, experience, and knowledge, which is what you're talking about. So, Colleen, I want to bring Wendy on because she's waiting patiently, calling all the way from China. And then before we get into Wendy's book, we're going to talk about how people can find you when you'll stay on. Wendy Wang, welcome to Read My Lips. How are you, Wendy?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. Say hello to Colleen. I know you two met in New York.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi, Wendy.
It was an interesting topic.
Yeah, thank you. We'll talk to you about that in a second. And my segue is that you're talking about wisdom does not happen without the three elements of time, experience, and knowledge. And I think that's what we're talking about a little bit with Colleen also, Wendy, is the fact of wisdom, that the older workforce, the older people in the workforce have that experience. They have that knowledge, and they've earned the right to say they've got some wisdom. They might not be that smart about certain things. Maybe they can't text very quickly or download music on iTunes, but they have wisdom. Before we get into that, Colleen, tell everybody, what's the name of your book and when is it coming out and where can we find it?
The book will be coming out in March. It's called Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You, How to Advance Your Career and Have More Fun at Work, based on over 200 in-depth conversations with managers, supervisors, and a few CEOs and top-level executives. And it will be available on the usual sites like Amazon, as well as my website, which is bouncebackhigher.com. Bounceback, Higher spelled HIGHER.com. And we've got articles and audio CDs and things on there.
Good. You going to stick around while we talk to Wendy and then you'll help me close the show?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Wendy Wing, let's talk about Chinese medicine. I know almost nothing about it other than I recognize the word acupuncture. I know it's been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And you're telling me that if I use Chinese medicine myself, I can get rid of headaches, wrinkles, that's what I want to talk about. I can lose weight and more. So, Wendy, what do you know about Chinese medicine? How did you learn all this stuff?
Actually, I was born in China and raised in China, and I went to college in the States. I didn't really believe Chinese medicine when I was young, but after we came back to China, and I started to get a chance to know some of the really good Chinese doctors, and they started to talk to me about this concepts about Chinese normalization, and the more I listen, the more I see the results people getting. And I'm really totally into this, and I start to research. I read a lot of books and talk to so many doctors. And the beauty about Chinese medicine is a lot of times, actually, you can treat yourself, and disease prevention is a really big thing. Unlike Western medicine, it's like you get rid of symptoms, but Chinese medicine is more like treating the root. Normalize your body, your organ functions, and let all the energy in your body balanced and enough energy to supply to all the organs. Your body.
Well, let's talk about energy. Mm-hmm. Now, energy, our body is an active energy field, you say, and you have something
mm-hmm.
called, in your book, you talk about Jingluo. Did I pronounce it right? Jingluo?
More like it's Jingluo. Actually, it's meridian and networks. It's two concepts in there.
Okay, so let's talk about the
mm-hmm.
easy word to pronounce, meridians. Where are my meridians? How do I find them, and what do I do with them when I can understand them, Wendy?
Yes, actually, there are 14 main meridians in our body. It runs longitudinally in your body. Some ends in your hands, some ends in your feet. Both feet, so both sides, six on each side. And these are the energy pathways to supply all the organs. The 12 main meridians actually connect to all your organs, like heart meridian, lung meridian, kidney meridian. These are the, like conduits, you know, like channel to supply body energy to those organs. You don't see them because they are
mm-hmm.
invisible, but they just like, you know, energy, you don't see electricity, but they do exist.
You have some wonderful, great diagrams in your book, Wendy, and I have
mm-hmm.
to say your book is called The Best Doctor in You, The Body's
That's
Vital
right.
Energy Field, and a lot more in the subtitle. So if somebody wanted to start understanding the
mm-hmm.
meridians, let's say everybody seems to have headaches. We talked about Richard. You heard Richard the first interview. The headache of violence, the headache of dating, the headaches that come from, am I pretty enough? And am I young enough? And am I tall enough? And am I going to have a good time on my date? That would give you a headache. And then we talked to Colleen about in the workplace, am I a good manager? Am I a good worker? Am I smart enough to get this job? What's it going to take to keep the job? Am I going to keep my sanity working or not working? And what if I'm out of the work? And how do I get back into work? So there's a lot of things that cause headaches today. How can you help us understand some simple meridians to get rid of our real headaches, Wendy? The ones we, not just, oh, my mother's a headache, but, well, my mother's wonderful. I mean, somebody else's mother. But the headaches of, I came home from work, I'm tired, and boy, do I
right.
have a headache. So how would I fix that with my meridians, Wendy?
Yes, actually, headaches are caused by very complex reasons, but there are some acupressure points that you can massage for yourself on your head. And there are two, both of you, next to your eyes on the side of your head. These two meridians called the Taiyang meridian. I actually have a name and how to find those acupressure points on my book, and because when you describe them, and maybe it's not that easy to find exactly where they are. But if you have a picture, it's really easy to find. They're not hard to find because they're not just that tiny point. It's a small area, and your finger is good enough to find those points. There are two points next to your eyes and on the side of your head, so mm-hmm. you probably know approximately where they are. And there are two points on the back of your head. Actually, those pain points when you push on them, and if you feel a lot more pain than the other points, you can just keep massaging on them.
Do you massage with your fingertips or with your palm, or how hard are you supposed to massage, Wendy?
You can give some pressure, and at the level you can stand them. And don't you use too much pressure. If you hurt yourself, that's not good. But you can give pressure until you can't stand, the pressure. So give some little pressure. It's okay.
Okay. And now, do you do this with dry hands, or do you put any massage oil
both
on your hands, or what do you use?
It doesn't matter. Use both hands. Hands,
okay.
Whichever is convenient for you.
Okay.
And just massaging on them. Some points, there are another two points on your head, on your hands, actually. it's the painkiller, actually. Between your index finger and the thumb. If you close these two fingers,
mm-hmm.
There's a point, it's the highest point you can see on the back of your hand. And those two points are called hegu points. They are excellent painkiller. And push on those points for a couple minutes. You'll see the result.
Interesting. I'm looking in your book on page 108. I see the picture of the headache. It's
mm-hmm.
Figure 16 and figure 4-22, actually. It's chapter or section 16. And you talk about
mm-hmm.
the Tai Yang point. And then I
yes.
see the back of the neck is the Chen Zhou points. I see the two dots.
Chen Zhou points, the BL
Chen Zhou points. And then I see the
yeah.
hand. That's the Quin Gu. How do you pronounce that?
It's Qian Gu points. These two points and another two points are it's on the other page. The points are
on the arm.
Points on the back of your hands.
Right.
It's on the large meridian, large intestine meridian, and they are excellent painkiller.
Interesting. Now, how many times a day, if somebody has a prolonged headache, how many times a day would you suggest that they do this massaging?
Well, as long as you get a pain, you can keep doing the massage.
Okay.
Until you feel better.
Now, you have one on page 111 that intrigued me. Colleen, I think you're going to appreciate this. Not personally, but I'm sure you've heard people who say, my mind is foggy. I just can't focus. I can't concentrate. Things are a little mushy. I can't remember things the way I used to, blah, blah, blah. You just can't think
mm-hmm.
straight is the way Wendy describes it in the book. And you use both hands to cross your hands and lock the fingers. Can you explain this one to us, Wendy? I found this very, very interesting.
Yes, because on your hands, on the inner side of your hands, actually back then too, there are a lot of reflection area for your organs. And your head, your old organs, if you keep stimulating all these areas, this sends a strong signal to your brain, and it'll wake up your brain. And another good way is use the clapping your hands.
Yeah,
and,
really? That
clapping
me.
For 5 minutes, actually every day, you give the whole day, the full energy for your whole day.
Wow, you say stretch the arms upwards and clap your hands with some force 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Then stretch the arms straight forward and clap 3 times. The sound sends a strong signal to the brain and increases its vigilance. Now, you talk about finger kneading as well. With one hand, squeeze the tip of
yep.
the thumb with the tip of the other 4 fingers with a rhythm and different counts. The index finger twice, the middle once, the ring finger 3,
mm-hmm.
and the little finger 4 times. And then go from the index finger to the little finger and the little to the index and repeat several times for both hands. And that makes your mind more focused. I could do that.
Yeah,
very
easy. It's all like stimulating your brain, because these areas are directly connected to your brain. And you give pressure on your hands. It's hard to imagine, but they are, because they are all connected. Your body actually is all connected with all energy you know, transfers from one area to another area. So you push, treat all this reflection area on your hand and the foot. Your brain gets the signal. So that's how you wake up your brain.
Wendy, tell me about reflexology. I have my nails done at a Chinese salon, and they offer, they do pedicures as well as manicures, and they offer for an extra price, of course, a reflexology foot massage. I have always believed in this, but I'm fascinated by the idea that all of the major body organs have nerve endings in different parts of the foot, and by properly massaging the foot, you can relax or heal what's going on in the rest of the body. Is this part of Chinese medicine?
Yes, it is. And not only the foot, your hands, like I just said, your hands, your ears, and your stomach, a lot of area on your body has the reflection area to your all the organs in your body. Actually, you stimulate all these, the other area, which you can touch. You can't touch your kidney, you can't touch your liver, right? And you can touch your foot, bottom of your foot. And your hands, you can clap in your hands and then massage your ears in the morning. Actually, that's one of the king in the ancient time. So how he keeps good health, massaging ears in the morning every day. So this area actually directly has a connection to your different organs. And
Wendy, how would I know if the person at the salon really is trained in reflexology, if they're just sitting there rubbing my foot? I know I've seen the chart on the wall with the mapping of all the organs, but what kind of training goes into being a really good reflexology massage therapist? Is that something that takes a long time to learn?
Well, actually, it's not. It's just, you know, keep you good health, maintenance. You don't really need such a professional training.
Okay.
You know the diagram. There are diagrams in your salon, and I have diagrams on my book. You know roughly where those areas are, and you can treat yourself also. But if you want to be a professional, you want to treat disease for people, you have to have professional training somewhere.
Interesting. What we haven't really mentioned, and we just have 2 minutes left, is the factor of touch. I know when somebody touches you the right way, it's so comforting and caring, and there's a connection. And Colleen, you probably have found this too, the sense of the wellness that a massage brings, whether it's a foot massage, a back massage, a leg massage, whatever part of the body, or full body massage, there's this human connection. Wendy, would you say this is an important
Absolutely.
Part of... Yep. So we have about 2 minutes left. Wendy, let's give your website, thebestdoctorinyou.com, and tell me where...
That's my book's website.
That's your book's website. Where's your website?
My website is bodyfoodenergy.com.
Bodyfoodenergy.com. Okay,
yeah,
I'm going to
write
that down.
Yeah, it talks about food and energy, and I send out health tips every week.
Oh, wonderful. So people can sign up for your health tips. And what's next for you in this year? Are you going to write another book, or are you marketing your book, or what are you up to?
I'm going to write another book, so two books in my mind. One is about reflexology, actually, the book Foot and Hand. Another one, I'm going to have an easier version of a massage for different syndromes like headache, beauty,
Wonderful.
Whatever.
Yeah. You're going to get in touch with me when your books come out, okay, please?
I will. Thank you.
And Colleen, what's next for you in 2011? We have about a minute left, and you're both going to join me in the big moi kiss for a better, healthier, happier world. 90 seconds.
Sure, Bonnie.
Colleen, you got 30 seconds to tell me what's new for you on the stage of 2011.
Oh, it's new for me on the stage of 2011. I'm writing a second book, Adopting Joy, about overcoming adversity, following your fate, and finding joy, just paying attention to the signs in front of you. And it's largely at the benefits of adopting a rescue animal. Joy's my dog.
Oh, wonderful. I had David Dayan Fisher on the show a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you heard the interview. He He's the villain on NCIS, anyway. I've got to put my outro music on, and I'm going to start to say goodbye as soon as my cursor stops spinning and spinning and spinning. Here we go. Here's my closing music. I want to say thank you so much to Richard Hart. I don't know if your music's going to play tonight. This thing is spinning and spinning and spinning. But this has been Read My Lips. I'm Bonnie D. Graham. I've had wonderful guests on. I don't think we're getting our music tonight. I want to thank Colleen Kettenhoffen. I want to thank Wendy Wang and Richard Hart. Wonderful guests sharing such great information with me. Well, just us three girls. So Wendy and Colleen, I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to pucker up, and we're going to do a big moi kiss. It's going to heal all the violence in the world and make everybody healthier and no headaches. Okay, Wendy, can you do that?
Yep.
Everybody take a deep breath. Here we go, girls. So pucker up and breath and see if you can go longer than me. It's just been my joy to have you both on. I love you all. I've had a great show. Wendy, thanks for calling all the way from China. Have a great year. Colleen, keep doing what you're doing and pass along good information. And to Richard,
thank you for having me.
Thanks for helping to end violence. And blessings to our Congresswoman, Gabby Giffords, in Tucson. I hope she makes a full recovery. And thanks to the heroes of health. Love you all. I'm Bonnie D. Graham. We will see you next week here on Read My Lips. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.